Hello, and welcome to One World, One Health, where we take a look at some of the biggest problems facing our world. I'm Maggie Fox. This podcast is brought to you by the One Health Trust, with bite-sized insights into ways to help address challenges such as infectious diseases, climate change, and pollution. A One Health approach recognizes that everything on this planet, the animals, plants, and people, and the climate and environment are all linked. There's little doubt that vaccines save lives, but at what cost? Vaccine campaigns are expensive and complicated for governments, and the vaccines themselves cost money, of course. The Office of Health Economics, an independent health economics research organization, set out to put a number on it. They analyzed the value delivered by four adult vaccines in 10 of the countries they're available. It's a surprising amount, they found, just four commonly given vaccines against influenza, pneumococcal disease, respiratory syncytial virus or RSV, and herpes zoster or shingles provide more than $4,600 in benefits for every person vaccinated. It works out to 19 times as much benefit as they cost to deliver. In this episode, we're chatting with Lotte Stuten, Deputy CEO of the Office of Health Economics, who helped put together the report. We're going to talk about all the ways the vaccines not only save lives, but make people healthier and more productive. Lotte, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You have helped write a report that shows that vaccines pay off literally. Can you tell us some of the ways in which they pay off? They save lives, but what else do they do?
Yeah, so basically the report that we did, so we looked at the return on investment from adult vaccination. And indeed, we focused first of all, like, you know, do they save lives? Of course, because that is clearly very important to people. But we also found like other ways and how they pay off. And that is by preventing serious disease. So for example, not getting an infectious disease at all, or if you get it, that the consequences are less severe. And then a second way is that they pay off is to the healthcare system. If you don't get a disease, or for example, you are less ill, you may need fewer doctor and hospital visits, hopefully. And that way, those resources can be used to help other patients. And thirdly, they pay off to society because they contribute to a very healthy and active workforce throughout the life of our populations. And that can help boost productivity.
And those are almost direct benefits. What are some of the indirect benefits?
Yes, so that's a very good question. So productivity is sometimes also considered like an indirect benefit, depending on how policymakers look at that. But even beyond that, we actually see that these programs can also contribute to health and economic equity within countries. And for example, they particularly benefit some of the more vulnerable populations and some of the underserved communities. And that way, that's a very important indirect benefit. And on top of that, they can also help to combat antimicrobial resistance. And they can do so by sort of preventing people that develop diseases that would sort of further down the line potentially need an antibiotic to be treated. So if you don't get pneumococcal disease, for example, then you would not need antibiotics. And if we reduce the use of antibiotics, that helps with antimicrobial resistance. So that's another indirect benefit.
And by antimicrobial resistance, we mean the development of these drug-resistant germs that don't respond to antibiotics or antiviral drugs.
Yes, exactly.
Now, people, of course, care about saving lives, but governments also have to think about money and costs. And as you just said, it saves money. But this report, you put a very precise number on how much money is saved, 19 times return. How do you figure that number out?
Let me basically sort of start with telling you a little bit like what is involved in that number. And that helps me to explain like how we arrived at this magical number 19 indeed. So basically when we did the analysis, we looked first of all at what are the costs of delivering these adult vaccination programs. So including the cost of the vaccines, making sure people get their jabs, considering that people need to take off time potentially to get their jab. And sometimes people have side events or side effects that need some treatment. So that's one part of it. So that's the cost side of the equation. And then we looked at the benefits, and these basically capture sort of three main outcome buckets or benefit buckets. And one is the value that societies place on reducing mortality risk, so saving lives, the value that we place on reducing morbidity, so fewer illnesses or less severe illnesses. And the third bucket is the impact, the positive impact on people's productivity. So then how we got to this number 19 is basically we first of all looked at the costs that go into these programs. So we add those all up and then we look at the benefit that these return and the ratio of these two that ends up with the number 19. It sounds like a very precise number and it is, but it's also the average across all the programs that we studied and all the countries that were involved in this analysis. So therefore, this is one number that basically represents all of that. So basically, the important thing of understanding the number 19 is, of course, that it will be a little bit different if you look at a specific country and a specific program. But very consistently across all the results we found, it is always above one and typically well above one. And 19, basically, like I said, is sort of best estimate that we have based on the best data available and the methods that are typically used for these types of analysis.
And you mentioned that you did this across countries. Can you tell us about the 10 countries you chose and why?
So we included 10 countries in this analysis. And basically, we try to find a set of countries that are quite different in terms of where they are in this world. So we have countries across the full globe, but also countries that have different income levels, different demographics, different healthcare systems as well. And we did that to try and establish that across this broad variety of countries, we did see that the value of adult vaccination is consistently positive. The reason for doing that really is to help policymakers around the world to hopefully see the results for their specific country, if they're part of the 10, but otherwise see a country that is a little bit like their country, and that will help them hopefully to understand what the cost benefit of these programs would be in a country, you know, like theirs, and help them to make decisions, but also to see that across a very broad diversity of contexts, the results are always positive.
And you might not have these figures to hand, but if you do, can you tell us a little bit about where it saved the most money and where it saved the least money?
That is a very good question. So the full report has all the numbers and I don't know them specifically from the top of my head. So I don't want to call out specific numbers here for that reason. But I think the very important thing is sort of looking at the differences. Like when we make decisions, I guess the question for policymakers, not so much, should we invest in program A or in program B? Because all these diseases happen and they are very important for people who incur them and they are important to prevent. So in the same way as we do not decide we will only treat breast cancer but not prostate cancer, it's not so much a matter of comparing between these programs. It's basically really important to understand that they all provide very good value for money. And of course there are differences and the factors sort of underlying that are very diverse. It has to do with sort of the incidence of the disease in these different countries, the current healthcare systems that they have, the uptake of the vaccines, of course the price of the vaccines, but also the cost of the healthcare system more generally. So it's a multitude of factors that really influences higher versus lower cost-benefit ratios.
And you have another number that you put on all this. And again, it's an average, I think, across all the countries, but it was $4,600 per person in benefits. Can you explain that number to us?
Yes, I can. So basically, when we calculated all the benefit cost ratios for all these countries and all these programs, and then we basically estimated like what this would amount to in totality, that amounts to billions of dollars to, you know, all these people and all these countries and all society. And such a big number is really hard to get your head around, really. So what we did is we took that big number and then we divided it by the number of full vaccination courses. And what I mean by that, for flu, for example, you get one shot, that's your full vaccination course. And for some of the herpes zoster vaccinations, you need two shots. So whether that would be one or two, we basically considered the full vaccination course. So we divided that big number by the number of full vaccination courses. And that gets you to the number of 4,600 per person.
So you didn't look at every single vaccine there is out there for adults. Why did you choose the ones that you did choose?
So we looked at the vaccines for flu, pneumococcal disease, RSV, and herpes zoster. And similar as how we made the decision to choose those 10 countries, we again looked for like different types of programs. So basically, we wanted to have a good balance between some of the more established programs, such as flu, that have been around for a long time, but also RSV, which is much more of an emerging vaccination programs in some countries. And also the programs that we looked at, these four, they are different in how they impact on our health. So herpes zoster, for example, achieves its main benefit to people from improving their quality of life by avoiding a very painful disease, whereas some of the other programs also save lives, which is unlikely in the case of herpes zoster. So very different type of impact. And we found this was a really important mix to sort of go for, because you wanted to establish that across this broad variety of vaccination programs, that they deliver a positive impact, especially when looking at some of these what we call broader value elements, such as productivity, impact on care, quality of life, etc. So yeah, that's the reason behind the choice for these programs.
Yeah, herpes zoster, shingles, that's one you really don't want to get, even though it doesn't kill you. I mean, it's not a joke to say sometimes you wish you were dead. It's very painful and debilitating.
It definitely is, yeah.
It's easy to have vaccines for children, vaccine programs. A lot of it's tied up with education, but it's a lot harder to corral adults. Did you have any guidance or do you have any guidance for governments on putting together adult vaccination programs?
Yeah, that is a very good question. I think most people indeed are used to the pediatric or children's vaccination programs, whereas the adult ones, particularly some of the more novel ones, need a bit more awareness of like, why are these so important for people to go for? And I think for governments, it's really important to understand the benefits that they bring, not only to the individual that's vaccinated and, of course, not having those diseases, but also in terms of productivity for the workforce, et cetera. So I think that is really important message. And making sure that, you know, people are aware of that and maybe even helping to sort of make sure there's this good information out there about the value of those vaccines, but also risks associated with them, potential side effects. I think it's really important that people are well informed about the vaccines that they can get.
It might make some people suspicious that this report was commissioned by the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations. Is this report just a justification for giving a lot of money to Big Pharma?
That is a very important question to ask. So at the Office of Health Economics, we do independent and objective research. And so therefore, we can stand by these results and did a very thorough analysis across all the literature, both positive studies as well as studies that maybe do not show the best possible results. So we took all the literature and all the data available into the study to come up with the answers and the estimates that we have. And therefore, these studies will also be submitted for publication in academic journals where they will undergo the peer review as well. So this is all part of like the standard process that independent research organizations like ours always follow to sort of justify those results. I think that is really important to understand that almost everyone who works in a certain area, whether it's manufacturers or governments, everyone has their own goals that they want to achieve. And it's really important to have like independent research that is trustworthy to sort of help guide decisions about such important topics.
It might help to tell people a little bit about the Office of Health Economics. How long have you been around?
Yes, indeed. So we are the oldest independent health economics research organization in the world. We have existed for over 60 years. Like I said, what we do is objective and independent research on the economics of health. And so therefore, we do this research to really help inform decisions and policy around the world to make decisions about, you know, how to invest in health and healthcare in the most cost-effective way, if you could say it like this. Yeah.
Latte, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it. You can learn more about this podcast and other important topics at onehealthtrust.org. And let us know what else you'd like to hear about at owoh@onehealthtrust.org. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to One World, One Health, brought to you by the One Health Trust. I'm Ramanan Lakshminarayan, founder and president of the One Health Trust. You can subscribe to One World, One Health on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media at One Health Trust, one word, for updates on One World, One Health and the latest in research on One Health issues like drug resistance, disease spillovers, and the social determinants of health. Finally, please do consider donating to the One Health Trust to support this podcast and other initiatives and research that help us promote health and well-being worldwide. Until next time.